27. They made their way down the clattering spiral staircase to the lower room. Not much had changed down there. The people on the lower level had lit torches there, too. Binet was busy at three computers at once, processing data from the telescopes upstairs. Other astronomers were doing other things, all of them incomprehensible to Theremin. Sheeran was wandering around by himself, a lost soul. Folliman had carried his chair directly beneath a torch and continued reading, lips moving in the monotonous recital of invocations to the stars. Through Theremin's mind ran phrases of description, bits and pieces of the article he had planned to write for tomorrow's Sorrow City Chronicle. Several times earlier in the evening, the writing machine in his brain had clicked on the same way. A perfectly methodical, perfectly conscientious, and, as he was only too well aware, perfectly meaningless procedure. It was wholly preposterous to imagine that there was going to be an issue of the Chronicle tomorrow. He exchanged glances with Sephira. "The sky," she murmured. "I see it, yes." It had changed tone again. Now it was darker still, a horrible deep purple red, a monstrous color, as though some enormous wound in the fabric of the heavens were gushing fountains of blood. The air had grown somehow denser. Dusk, like a palpable entity, entered the room, and the dancing circle of yellow light about the torches etched itself into ever sharper distinction against the gathering grayness beyond. The odor of smoke here was just as cloying as it had been upstairs. Theremin found himself bothered even by the little chuckling sounds that the torches made as they burned, and by the soft pad of Sheeran's footsteps as the heavy-set psychologist circled round and round the table in the middle of the room. It was getting harder to see, torches or no. So now it begins, Theremin thought, the time of total darkness and the coming of the stars. For an instant he thought it might be wisest to look for some cozy closet to lock himself into until it was all over. Stay out of the way, avoid the sight of the stars, hunker down and wait for things to become normal again. But a moment's contemplation told him what a bad idea that was. A closet, any sort of enclosed place, would be dark too. Instead of being safe, snug harbor, it might become a chamber of terrors far more frightening than the rooms of the observatory. And then, too, if something big was going to happen, something that would reshape the history of the world, Theremin didn't want to be tucked away with his head under his arm while it was going on. That would be cowardly and foolish, and it might be something he would regret all the rest of his life. He had never been the sort of man to hide from danger, if he thought there might be a story in it. Besides, he was just self-confident enough to believe that he would be able to withstand whatever was about to occur. And there was just enough skepticism left in him so that at least a part of him wondered whether anything significant was going to happen at all. He stood still, listening to Sephira's occasional indrawn breaths, the quick little respirations of someone trying to retain composure in a world that was all too swiftly retreating into the shadow. Then came another sound, a new one, a vague, unorganized impression of a sound that might well have gone unnoticed but for the dead silence that prevailed in the room and for Theremin's unnatural focus of attention as the moment of totality grew near. The newspaper man stood tensely listening, holding his breath. After a moment, he carefully moved toward the window and peered out. The silence ripped to fragments at his startled shout, "Sheeran!" There was an uproar in the room. They were all looking at him, pointing, questioning. The psychologist was at his side in a moment. Sephira followed. Even Binet, crouched in front of his computers, swung around to look. Outside, Dovim was a mere smoldering splinter, taking one last desperate look at Calgash. The eastern horizon in the direction of the city was lost in darkness, and the road from Sorrow City to the observatory was a dull red line. The trees of the wooded tracts that bordered the highway on both sides had lost all individuality and merged into a continuous, shadowy mass. But it was the highway itself that held attention, for along it there surged another, an infinitely menacing, shadowy mass, surging like a strange, shambling beast up the slopes of Observatory Mount. "Look!" Theremin cried hoarsely. "Someone tell Athor! The madmen from the city! Folliman's people! They're coming!" "How long to totality?" Sheeran asked. 15 minutes, Binet rasped. But they'll be here in 5. Never mind. Keep everyone working, Sharon said. His voice was steady, controlled, unexpectedly commanding, as though he had managed to tap into some deep reservoir of inner strength in this climactic moment. We'll hold them off. This place is built like a fortress. You, Sephira, go upstairs and let Aethor know what's happening. You, Bine, keep an eye on Philemon. Knock him down and sit on him if you have to, but don't let him out of your sight. Theramon, come with me. Sharon was out the door, and Theramon followed at his heels. The stairs stretched below them in tight circular sweeps around the central shaft, fading into a dank and dreary grayness. The first momentum of their rush had carried them 50 feet down, so that the dim, flickering yellow from the open door of the room behind them had disappeared, and both up above and down, the same dusky shadow crushed in upon them. Sharon paused, and his pudgy hand clutched at his chest. His eyes bulged, and his voice was a dry cough. His whole body was quivering in fear. Whatever the final source of resolve he had found a moment ago now seemed exhausted.
I can't breathe. Go down. Yourself. Make sure all doors are closed.
Theramon took a few downward steps. Then he turned. Wait, can you hold out a minute? He was patting himself. The air passed in and out of his lungs like so much molasses, and there was a little germ of screeching panic in his mind at the thought of making his way farther below by himself. What if the guards had left the main door open somehow? It wasn't the mob he was afraid of. It was darkness. Theramon realized that he was, after all, afraid of the dark.
Stay here, he said unnecessarily to Sharon, who was huddled dismally on the staircase where Theramon had left him.
I'll be back in a second. He dashed upward, 2 steps at a time, heart pounding, not altogether from the exertion, tumbled into the main room and snatched a torch from its holder. Sephira stared at him, eyes wide with bewilderment.
Shall I come with you? She asked.
Yes, no, no. He ran out again. The torch was foul-smelling, and the smoke smarted his eyes almost blind, but he clutched that torch as if he wanted to kiss it for joy. Its flame streamed backward as he hurtled down the stairs again. Sharon hadn't budged. He opened his eyes and moaned as Theramon bent over him. The newspaper man shook him roughly.
All right, get a hold of yourself. We've got light.
He held the torch at tiptoe height, and propping the tottering psychologist by an elbow, made his way downward again, protected now by the sputtering circle of illumination. On the ground floor, everything was black. Theramon felt the horror rising within him again, but the torch sliced a way through the darkness for him.
The security men, Sharon said.
Where were they? Had they fled? It looked that way. No, there were a couple of the guards Aethor had posted, jammed up against the corner of the hallway, trembling like jelly. Their eyes were blank, their tongues were lolling. Of the others, there was no sign.
Here, Theramon said brusquely, and passed the torch to Sharon. You can hear them outside.
And they could. Little scraps of hoarse, wordless shouts. But Sharon had been right. The observatory was built like a fortress. Erected in the last century, when the Neo-Gavatian style of architecture was at its ugly height, it had been designed for stability and durability rather than for beauty. The windows were protected by the grillwork of inch-thick iron bars sunk deep into the concrete sills. The walls were solid masonry that an earthquake couldn't have touched, and the main door was a huge oaken slab reinforced with iron at strategic points. Theramon checked the bolts. They were still in place.
At least they can't just walk in here the way Philemon did, he said, patting. But listen to them. They're right outside.
We have to do something.
Damned right, Theramon said. Don't just stand there. Help me drag these display cases up against the doors and keep that torch out of my eyes. The smoke's killing me.
The cases were full of books, scientific instruments, all sorts of things, a whole museum of astronomy. The gods only knew what the display cases weighed. But some supernal force had taken possession of Theramon in this moment of crisis, and he heaved and pulled them into place, aided more or less by Sharon, as though they were pillows. The little telescopes and other gadgets within them went tumbling over as he jockeyed the heavy cases into position. There was a sound of breaking glass. Bine will kill me, Theramon thought. He worships all that stuff. But this was no moment for being delicate. He slammed one case after another up against the door, and in a few minutes had built a barricade that might, he hoped, serve to hold back the mob if it succeeded in breaking through the gate. Somewhere, dimly far off, he could hear the battering of bare fists against the door. Screams. Yells.
It was all like a ghastly dream. The mob had set out from Sorrow City driven by the hunger for salvation. The salvation held forth by the Apostles of Flame, which could be attained now, they had been told, only by the destruction of the observatory. But as the moment of darkness drew near, a maddening fear had all but stripped their minds of the ability to function. There was no time to think of ground cars or of weapons or of leadership or even of organization. They had rushed to the observatory on foot, and they were assaulting it with bare hands. And now that they were there, the last flash of Dovim, the last ruby-red drop of sunlight, flickered feebly over a humanity that had nothing left but stark, universal fear. Theramin groaned. "Let's get back upstairs." There was no sign of anyone now in the room where they had been gathered. They had all gone to the topmost floor, into the observatory dome itself. As he came rushing in, Theramin was struck by an eerie calmness that seemed to prevail in there. It was like a tableau. Emot was seated in the little lean-back seat at the control panel of the gigantic solar scope, as if this were just an ordinary evening of astronomical research. The rest were clustered about the smaller telescopes, and Bine was giving instructions in a strained, ragged voice. "Get it straight, all of you. It's vital to snap Dovim just before totality and change the plate. Here, you, one of you to each camera. We need all the redundancy we can get. You all know about times of exposure." There was a breathless murmur of agreement. Bine passed a hand over his eyes. "Are the torches still burning? Oh, never mind, I see them." He was leaning hard against the back of a chair. "Now remember, don't try to look for fancy shots. When the stars appear, don't waste time trying to get two of them in the scope field at a time. One is enough, and if you feel yourself going, get away from the camera." At the door, Sheeran whispered to Theramin, "Take me to Waythor. I don't see him." The newspaper man did not answer immediately. The vague forms of the astronomers wavered and blurred, and the torches overhead had become only yellow splotches. The room was cold as death. Theramin felt Sephira's hand graze his for a moment, only a moment, and then he was unable to see her. "It's dark," he whimpered. Sheeran held out his hands.
"Aethor!"
He stumbled forward.
"Aethor!"
Theramin stepped after him and seized his arm. "Wait, I'll take you." Somehow he made his way across the room. He closed his eyes against the darkness and his mind against the pounding chaos that was rising within it. No one heard them or paid attention to them. Sheeran stumbled against the wall.
"Aethor!"
"Is that you, Sheeran?"
Yes, Aethor.
What is it, Sheeran?"
Aethor's voice unmistakably.
"I just wanted to tell you, don't worry about the mob. The doors are strong enough to hold them out."
"Yes, of course,"
Aethor muttered. He sounded, Theramin thought, as if he were many miles away. Light years away. Suddenly another figure was among them, moving swiftly. A whirling flail of arms. Theramin thought it might be Emot or even Bine, but then he felt the rough fabric of a cultist's robe and knew that it must be Follyman.
"The stars!"
Follyman cried.
"Here come the stars! Get out of my way!"
"He's trying to get to Bine," Theramin realized, "to destroy the blasphemous cameras." "Watch out!" Theramin called, but Bine still sat huddled in front of the computers that activated the cameras, snapping away as the full darkness swept down. Theramin reached out. He caught hold of Follyman's robe, yanked, twisted. Suddenly there were clutching fingers at his throat. He staggered crazily. There was nothing before him but shadows. The very floor beneath his feet lacked substance. A knee drove hard into his gut, and he grunted in a blinding haze of pain and nearly fell. But after the first gasping moment of agony, his strength returned. He seized Follyman by the shoulders, somehow swung him around, hooked his arm around the apostle's throat. At the same time, he heard Bine croak,
"I've got it! At your cameras, everyone!"
Theramin seemed conscious of everything at once. The entire world was streaming through his pounding mind, and everything was in chaos. Everything was screaming with terror. There came the strange awareness that the last thread of sunlight had thinned out and snapped. Simultaneously, he heard one last choking gasp from Follyman, and a heavy bellow of amazement from Bine, and a queer little cry from Sheeran, a hysterical giggle that cut off in a rasp. And a sudden silence. A strange, deadly silence from outside. Follyman had gone limp in his loosening grasp. Theremin peered into the apostle's eyes and saw the blankness of them, staring upward, mirroring the feeble yellow of the torches. He saw the bubble of froth upon Folliman's lips and heard the low animal whimper in Folliman's throat. With the slow fascination of fear, he lifted himself on one arm and turned his eyes toward the blood-curdling blackness of the sky. Through it shone the stars. Not the one or two dozen of Binet's pitiful theory. There were thousands of them, blazing with incredible power. One next to another, next to another, next to another. An endless wall of them, forming a dazzling shield of terrifying light that filled the entire heavens. Thousands of mighty suns shone down in a soul-searing splendor that was more frighteningly cold in its awful indifference than the bitter wind that shivered across the cold, horribly bleak world. They hammered at the roots of his being. They beat like flails against his brain. Their icy, monstrous light was like a million great gongs going off at once. "My God," he thought. "My God. My God. My God." But he could not tear his eyes away from the hellish sight of them. He looked up through the opening in the dome, every muscle rigid, frozen, and stared in helpless wonder and horror at that shield of fury that filled the sky. He felt his mind shrinking down to a tiny cold point under that unceasing onslaught. His brain was no bigger than a marble, rattling around in the hollow gourd that was his skull. His lungs would not work. His blood ran backward in his veins. At last, he was able to close his eyes. He knelt for a time, panting, murmuring to himself, fighting to regain control. Then Theremin staggered to his feet, his throat constricting him to breathlessness, all of the muscles of his body writhing in a tensity of terror and sheer fear beyond bearing. Dimly he was aware of Sephira, somewhere near him, but he had to struggle to remember who she was. He had to work at remembering who he was. From below came the sound of a terrible, steady pounding, a frightful hammering against the door, some strange, wild beast with a thousand heads struggling to get in. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. He was going mad and knew it, and somewhere deep inside a bit of sanity was screaming, struggling to fight off the hopeless flood of black terror. It was very horrible to go mad and know that you were going mad, to know that in a little minute, you would be here physically, and yet all the real essence that was you would be dead and drowned in the black madness. For this was the dark and the cold and the doom. The bright walls of the universe were shattered, and their awful black fragments were falling down to crush and squeeze and obliterate him. Someone came crawling toward him on hands and knees and jostled up against him. Theremin moved aside. He put his hands to his tortured throat and limped toward the flames of the torches that filled all his mad vision.
"Light!"
he screamed. Athor somewhere was crying, whimpering horribly like a terribly frightened child.
"The stars! All the stars! We didn't know at all. We didn't know anything. We thought six stars is a universe, is something the stars didn't notice, is darkness forever and ever and ever, and the walls are breaking in, and we didn't know, we couldn't know, and anything."
Someone clawed at the torch, and it fell and snuffed out. In that instant, the awful splendor of the indifferent stars leaped nearer to them. From below came the sound of screams and shouts and breaking glass. The mob, crazed and uncontrollable, had broken into the observatory. Theremin looked around. By the awful light of the stars, he saw the dumbstruck figures of the scientists lurching about in horror. He made his way into the corridor. A fierce blast of chilly air coming through an open window struck him, and he stood there, letting it hit his face, laughing a little at the arctic intensity of it. "Theremin?" a voice called behind him. "Theremin?" He went on laughing.
"Look," he said after a time. "Those are the stars. This is the flame."
On the horizon outside the window, in the direction of Sorrow City, a crimson glow began growing, strengthening in brightness. That was not the glow of a sun. The long night had come again.